Hey everyone, I just wanted to say really quick, I have a new podcast that you can listen to if you want to. It's called The Level Up Pod, together with Murph, who some of you may know from Game Nights or the Command Zone podcast. We're just talking about the video games we own, the consoles we love, and why we love collecting. You can check it out anywhere where podcasts are found. Follow us at LevelUpPod_ on Twitter. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to the Herald's Horn. On this episode, Dan and I are going to chop it up about the news, and let's see, what else? Oh, we've got Hobbs and Tron is Bad in the second half of the show to talk about their mental health initiative in the Magic the Gathering space, Better Days MTG. It's a great episode. I think you're going to love it. I just wanted to plug something here really quick. As you know, we have a Herald's Horn Patreon. I'm sure you hear the ad in the middle of the show. I wanted to plug it again, especially today, because, well, I must admit, I am kind of tired of editing this show auditorially. It's not my strong suit. I like hopping on the horn. I like yapping. But the process of having to edit this myself is really draining me, and I don't know how much more of it I have in me, to be completely honest. So if you enjoy the Herald's Horn, it would be really helpful to me if you could toss a couple extra bucks my way via the Patreon so that I could then afford to pass that money on to someone else to edit the show for me. No pressure. I'm just saying, it'd be nice. I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And welcome back. We are here, two trained musicians, to talk to you about the news of Magic the Gathering, what has gone on in the last 2 weeks. I said it last week, not much has happened, and then we talked about it for over an hour. This week, not much has happened. Maybe we'll talk about it for less than an hour. We're going to hop right into the news. Once again, we have had a ban list update. That's one of the convenient things about doing these episodes almost only every other week, is that it seems like we always have a ban list update to talk about. That's kind of fun. It's kind of quirky. Nothing much of note coming through of this ban list, except for nearly 100 cards were banned in Legacy and Vintage and Pauper. Dan?
I haven't heard anyone vocalize it that way.
Can you name them all?
That's awesome. Yes. We have got Ambassador Glorpity Glorp is one of them. What's the blue one that Krark ran for a hot minute? Oh, I could almost name more than one.
I do not know.
Underscore
The Most Dangerous Gamer.
Oh, that's one. Yep. You got another one.
Okay. Buried the lead here. Wizards of the Coast came out last week for this ban announcement, and they said, all right, Unfinity, it was an interesting experiment. We are done. We are banning all sticker cards and all cards that care about attractions from specifically Legacy and Vintage, because those were the only formats that they oversee are impacted by those cards. Of course, then the Pauper Format Committee came out the same day. Pauper Format Panel, my bad, came out later that same day and said, yep, we're also banning all of the sticker and attraction cards and Pauper as well. All of the common ones, obviously. Pauper also, in that same banned and restricted announcement, banned the very powerful All That Glitters. It turns out, in a format where the artifact lands are legal and very strong, an enchantment that'll give a creature +1/+1 for each artifact you control is pretty strong. Have you been playing much Pauper, Dan?
No, I was actually just about to say that I was very glad that I missed the All That Glitters meta, because I was watching friend of the show, Cyrus from the Mental Misplay crew, playing some Pauper on MTGO, and All That Glitters did look like it was very, very powerful.
Yep. This is, of course, an episode where I'm really feeling Emma being missing, because I would have loved to hear from Emma about Pauper Format
their thoughts, you know, because Emma is on the Popper format panel. Emma is a part of that group that gets to say, hey, Gavin, you should really ban all that glitters. Something that really interested me about this ban update, especially the Popper one, but also all of the Wizards touched on every single format, even though they only technically banned cards out of Legacy and Vintage. They gave a good paragraph plus write up on every format, how they felt about them, where they thought they might be headed. And I think even for Legacy, they said, yeah, we have our eyes on like Grief and Bowmasters. We know that people are tired of those cards, but we want for Modern Horizons 3 to come out first before we just like ban a card, which does make sense because Modern Horizons 3 will probably be the most powerful set of all time, et cetera, et cetera, as these things happen to work. But it was a huge ban update and effectively two cards were banned, even though around 100 cards, I believe, were technically banned. Underscore Goblin was banned in Legacy and Popper. It was very good in both of those formats. And then All That Glitters was banned in Popper. Do you have any specifically strong thoughts about Unfinity, the resulting experimentation about making joke cards or, you know, cards from the joke sets, which have historically been silver bordered, a.k.a. not legal in constructed formats? How do you feel about that whole, I would say, a debacle in trying to make some of these joke cards legal in formats like Legacy, Vintage, Commander, etc.?
In theory, I don't mind. I mean, for Commander, I couldn't care less. Do whatever, you know.
Fun. That's just exactly stickers it's and attraction fun. Decks I've gone up against.
In constructed formats, like in a vacuum, I'm not against it. But I think in practice and the way that this turned out, specifically with the way that stickers and attractions are so complicated in a way that is outside of the normal realms of Magic. Magic is already so complicated. This is such an extra added complex layer to put on top of it. It seems like this is a little bit too much where we're if one of these joke cards just like had a mechanic that already existed on it, I don't see any sort of problem with that, even if it was like a little bit silly to some extent or something like that. But I think that this that level of a mechanic to introduce to these formats is a lot. Not to say that like Vintage and Legacy players can't handle that, but I do think that it is just it's a little bit too complex and it's a little bit too far over the line.
Yeah, I think that was one of like the weirdest things about the sticker and attractions mechanic. I personally I am very invested in Magic the Gathering, and I like tried to learn how they worked like more than one time, and it just never actually stuck in my brain. It's just like, oh, yeah, you can like roll a, if you can open an attraction, something, 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 and then you can like roll a D6 and see if you trigger an attraction and you put stickers on cards. Stickers are
specifically easy. Was very confusing to me. I played against our friend Tony, who is the Goto expert, enough times with Sticker Goblin to understand how like that works in terms of like having a sticker sheet pregame. Just like a deck of 15 cards that you have, that's basically a sideboard that you shuffle up and present as a pregame action. And then it applies differently to different cards, I think. But again, the rules of like what happens when you copy a Namesticker Goblin, what happens when you reanimate a Namesticker Goblin, all of these things are very complex and different. And then, of course, it also works differently on MTGO, which is primarily where the meta that is using these cards is taking place. And as far as that goes, are you aware of how the MTGO version of Namesticker Goblin works?
In my mind, let me pitch you how I think it works in my head. And you can tell me if I'm right or not. You roll a D20 on ETB, you roll a D20 and it makes different amount. It can make one of four different amounts of mana. Like if you roll 1 through 5, it makes X. 6 through 10 makes X, 11 through 15 X, 16 through 20 X. Is that correct?
I believe it's three different numbers because baseline is 4. And it's either 4, 5, or 6.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense.
But yeah, and then there's some extra clause. If you have like 9 copies of Name Sticker Goblin, it doesn't work or something else happens. I can't remember. I've never seen that happen before.
Oh, yeah. Because like you have, in theory, you then would have run out of stickers in your sticker deck at that point or whatever.
I've never made that connection before.
If it was a real game.
Okay. I can kind of, that kind of makes sense to me now. Yeah.
Because you get 3 sticker sheets and each has 3 names on them. So that would... that would be your upper limit, is you could get mana off 9 goblins.
Hmm. But yeah, like in that version where you're just rolling a 20-sided die, that is obviously infinitely easier to enact. It is all like a thing that is contained within the realm of knowledge of magic already. I think that is such a fantastic implementation of how that card works. Anurag Das has been a big proponent of trying to get the people at Wizards to errata how this card works in paper, which I don't think there's any true precedence for outside of like changing the way the companion works. But I mean, that's obviously the difference between changing like one piece of rules text as opposed to changing the text of an entire card.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of like accidental functional changes or whatever, as, or maybe even not accidental functional changes by them like clarifying how rules text works with modern interpretations of the rules. But I do believe that companion is the only time they've straight up said, ignore what's on the card. It works similarly, yet differently now.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love for that to be the answer to this problem, because I do think that Name Sticker Goblin is a really awesome card. It provided a really awesome, like, piece of Muxus decks and different red stompy decks. It was a very valuable piece of the meta for certain decks. And I think I would love to see those style of decks continue to have that leverage of power. But without Name Sticker Goblin, I think that they probably really can't hang on in the meta at all.
It would be interesting to me to now see if, like, in some kind of, I don't know, the next Commander, next Commander Legend set, if that's a thing, or in a future Commander Precon. Yeah. It would be, I wouldn't doubt if we do end up seeing a 3-drop, what is it, a 2/2?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think that's probably the most logical conclusion.
That does like the exact functionality of the MTGO version. Like,
yeah.
It's obviously was like good enough to see play, but not overwhelmingly powerful. And I have seen like legacy players, like I know we are both listeners of the Eternal Glory podcast. I know that crew was especially Phil, obviously, were pretty big fans of there being some kind of like actually pretty strong like aggro deck that like if you didn't interact with it, it would just kill you, because it'll just like put a Name Sticker Goblin into play, make a ton of mana, play a Muxus, boom, goblins everywhere. But like you alluded to, now that Name Sticker Goblin's gone, that deck's kind of DOA. It'd be nice to have it come back with a like functionally similar card.
Yeah, like maybe this is a boomer take, but like I miss like just a little scrappy deck like goblins being like an actual part of the legacy meta of a deck that you can play. And like, I don't know, not to say that like legacy is bad because you can't do that now, but like I do wish that there was more space for that. And I think it is largely because cards like Orcish Bowmasters are pushing that kind of stuff out of the meta. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not to mention just the power level of cards in general, but you know, give the goblin players something.
It's a lot harder to hit someone with a goblin lackey if they can just trivially remove your goblin lackey, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to shift focus a little bit. It's like similar yet different. I have laid out my thoughts extensively about the set Unfinity in general recently. In an article I wrote, Unfinity Unwanted? For TCGplayer.com. Thank you to Emma for putting in all the effort of editing that on like a 4-hour notice. My goat, Emma. As usual, I will link it in the description, yada, yada, yada. But I kind of feel like Unfinity has nothing left. That was kind of the... There was
you think this is like a nail in the coffin for that set in general?
This set in general, that, yeah. Like,
idea?
This set specifically. There was a tweet from Glenn Jones, former Magic designer, whose main cards he designed include Orcish Bowmaster, the One Ring, and Dockside Extortionist.
shout out to that. I love him.
Yeah. he responded to a Saffron Olive tweet talking about, you know, Saffron Olive was like, oh, I don't like their reasoning of we made them constructed legal so people could play them in Commander. Glenn Jones says there was not much upside to printing cards directly into Commander versus releasing them and banning them if needed. You'd miss out on everything that turns out fine and some sales. Is this outcome worse than launching them banned? Even if that is true, it might have turned off better and risk later. And then he like goes on and says like the failure, if there's going to be a failure, it has to be high risk to justify not trying. The relative audience sizes incentives are so disparate. It's hundreds of millions of potential revenue via a new model, aka uncards being legal in constructed formats, versus possibly killing the line. Seemed worthy taking a single shot on goal? Question mark. Well, good news, Glenn Jones. You probably killed the line. That's. I would personally be extremely shocked if we ever see an unset again, which I know some people would really celebrate. I personally historically have really liked them a lot. They're like a nice break, cool concepts, like unstable, while now obviously an outlier in the unset canon or whatever you want to call it, is one of my favorite Magic cards, one of my favorite Magic sets of all time, and one of like my favorite draft experiences ever. It's just awesome. And because they tried this whole like get rid of the silver border, acorn and normal stamp stuff to make some stuff not legal and some stuff legal, just like feels like it killed the product out of the gate. And now all of those cards, which were supposed to sell boxes maybe to Commander players, or well, they hasn't even been popular on Commander. Most people hate them. I don't know. I'm just mad about it. I'm just mad about it. That's why I wrote like 4,000 words about it. I was mad about it.
I don't think I disagree. Yeah. I disagree with the incentive that like you have to be able to take risks, especially from a marketing perspective, because like he's right. Like if that works out, that is going to be an extremely successful point in this person's career.
Sure.
But I do agree with you as well that just the execution of this across the board is just bad. And like, bad from the beginning too. Like the entire acorn stamp thing, that was immediately confusing to people. People immediately didn't like that. And for good reason. It is legitimately confusing. It's a very minute thing to take note of.
It's very just, small on the card in comparison to a normal stamp.
Many times I have like not understood why I'm looking at a card in someone's deck and then they're like, no, look at the little stamp on the bottom. I'm like, okay, you've passed the test. I'll put my gun down.
The most dangerous gamer does have a real holo stamp on it. Fascinating.
It was sawn half for me. I didn't believe that one the first time I saw it. And then, it was explained to me.
Yeah. Anyways, enough has been said about that by me. How do you feel about unsets in general, Dan? Do you like the vibe? Do you not like the vibe?
I'm not a fan. I think that's said this before in the podcast. I don't like games.
I hate gaming.
I like certain ones. I like Magic the Gathering and not Magic the Gathering's funny cousin. But I kind of feel that way about all like variants. Like I don't like Two-Headed Giant. I don't like I do like Plane Chase. That's my one like variant of Magic that I do enjoy. As a person who like really loves draft, it's never really appealed to me. And I think more so because when I was like playing Magic more intensely in game stores at that point in time when those sets were in paper and everything, I was always looking at like the value of like, is it worth it for me to like spend money on these packs of cards? And like with the unproducts, it's like, well, I can't use the cards anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, they're not legal anywhere. The best I'm going to get is like a cool basic land. And like, I just don't give a shit. They just never really appealed to me.
I think that that's one thing I wish I would have said a little bit better in my article. And now something I think I will try to say better here. The identification of full art basic lands across the entire product line, I think really ended up shooting the unsets in the foot, because like the unsets, like especially for unstable, even though it was like actually so way more popular than they expected it to be. For a minute there, the real draw to the unsets for people who were worried about value beyond having an interesting experience with the cards. Those basic lands, you know, like we did an unstable draft at my LGS when we were We did a lot of them, but in one of the drafts, one of the younger like high school kids cracked a foil island and it paid for all of his unstable drafts because I handed him a $100 bill on the spot, you know, because I wanted it so bad. So, and that, but now, full art basics that are beautiful are in every single set now. So they had to find some other way to add value to the set for people who would be interested in gaining monetary or other quote real card value from the set. And they tried to do that with the Shocklands too. Mm-hmm. And, but most of the Shockland art also just like stinks. I am the biggest Simic guy in the universe. I don't want the genitalia breeding pool. I don't.
Theoretically, like when I saw those Shocklands for the first time, like at a quick glance, I'm like, wow, that is so cool. That's such some an interesting concept. And then like when sick. I look at them more closely, like the Godless Shrine is the one with like the blacked out sun and the ship flying the around. That one, very, very cool.
That one's awesome.
Fantastic piece of art. The rest of them, though, it's just like looking at them closely. I'm just like, this art is not for me at all. It just doesn't really do anything for me. And that's the whole thing, I think, is that like that's why I really understand the point of you have to take a risk on this product. Because I think the longevity of a product like that without any sort of appeal to it beyond the in-person drafting experience and then the later experience of having the lands is like that is not enough to keep people on the hook for a product in the way that WotC wants them to be on the hook for it. Like you really need to give people that incentive to not only really want that in person, but like be demanding the next one. And we've only ever seen three of those across the span of like 15 or 20 years, right?
This was the fourth full set.
That was the fourth one. Okay.
Yep.
But yeah, still like a very sporadic thing and things that people loved. I remember people being extremely fond of these sets and of the drafting environment. But it's not changing the face of Magic, which is where WotC really wants to be at this point.
Yep. And I think at the end of the day, I like the concept of I like the concept of making some cards legal out of the set. That's like not offensive to me like it is to some people. I do wish they had apparently part of the problem was like they had to do the stamp to do it that way because they like literally came up with the idea too late in the process to just like make the silver border cards silver border and the black border cards black border. They just like didn't have the silver card stock on hand or something. I don't know. That's like what they've said. So I wish they had like come up with the idea sooner so that they could have just like kept the silver border. I think that would have been like less aesthetically offensive to me if that's what's offensive to me. But I think the real thing that like irks me about the entire thing is that like if you were going to take the shot, it should have been like with a cool, good mechanic that wasn't fiddly and confusing. Because that's like what both of them are.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. This is definitely a sort of seemingly half-baked, and apparently after what you just told me too, a half-baked execution of what could be a legitimately good risk and good business venture. But yeah, that is just poor execution.
All right, Cal's 20-minute stickers and attraction rant out of the way.
Yeah, I was there too.
That's true. You participated, Dan. Thank you for indulging me. If you would, listener, once again, if you would like to experience even more Cal ranting about Unfinity, the TCG Player website says it's a 13-minute read. So that'll get you right over a half hour of Cal and, well, I was going to say Cal and Dan Unfinity content, but
The spirit Cal of Infinity. Me is in that article.
Yes, exactly. I said, oh yeah, Dan hates this stuff. So that's enough of talking about unsets. Let's move on to talking about very real sets that will change the face of Magic the Gathering, Dan.
Yeah.
Modern Horizons 3 leaks will continue until morale improves. When we recorded the last episode, I kind of thought the leaks were all done because the main person who had been leaking them said, you know, they posted on Twitter and they're like, I've seen the error of my ways. I'm going to stop doing this. I'm deleting all my past tweets. I'm sure they got a cease and desist letter in the mail or whatever, like as to be expected for kind of activity, especially when they started being like very outspoken on their Twitter account. Like, hey, I'm the guy with a bunch of Modern Horizons 3 packs. Look at these pictures.
Okay. I missed all of this. I didn't know about the tweet apology or this part.
The Twitter arc of the leaker lasted like 12 hours.
That's really funny. I'll have to I'll have to do my own research on that one.
Yep. But something went wrong. Packs were distributed widely, accidentally, somehow.
So do we have confirmation that's how this happened? That's how this person got this?
I'm not sure. That's my assumption.
Okay.
That just like somehow some extra packs get out there into the wild. Because I'm pretty sure the leaks are coming from like multiple places now.
It seems like it, right? There's so many.
Yeah. There's so many leaks. We have, you know, we're recording this on May 21st, Tuesday. The official debut stream of, you know, the official first, like, we're going to show y'all a whole bunch of cool cards from the set stream for Modern Horizons 3 was today. It was this morning.
Yeah.
We have seen the majority of the set already, which does kind of stink. I've seen the majority of the set already. I've looked at all the leaks. My bad. But I don't want to sit here and say like, oh, it takes all the magic out of it. Oh, that's so sad. Cause I did it to myself. I could have just not looked at the leaks.
Well, this is the eternal, do you look at the presents debate?
Yes, exactly. Yes. I looked at all of the presents. I ruined Christmas for myself. But there was some cool stuff in there that I don't think we had leaked. Like, you know, they're doing the flip walkers again, right? We already knew about that. Mm-hmm. They did Grist. That's kind of awesome. There's a legendary Grist. One drop, a single green, 1/2 Death Toucher. When Grist voracious lava or another creature enters the battlefield under your control, if it entered from your graveyard or you cast it from your graveyard, you may pay green if you do exile Grist and then return it transformed into a planeswalker. And then the planeswalker itself is much stronger than I would expect from a one drop planeswalker.
This was one of the leaks that I saw and one that I was like, ooh, I hope that's real. That looks like a good card.
It was leaked? Ah, come on.
Yeah, that one was leaked. I saw that and a couple of the other ones leaked at some point a few weeks ago.
Well, to complete the card for the listeners who didn't see the leak, Grist the Plague Swarm has 3 loyalty. You can +1 them. Create a 1/1 black and green insect creature token, then mill 2 cards. Put a death touch counter on the token if a black card was milled this way. That's pretty sick. -2, so you can do this as soon as it's flipped. Destroy target artifact or enchantment, notably not a creature. And then -6, so if he stays on the battlefield for 3 turns, you can -6 him. For each creature card in your graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a 1/1 black and green insect. That's a neat card. I love flip walkers so much. After we saw the first one, Ajani wasn't super pushed, in my opinion. Grist seems a little more pushed for sure. And then they also showed off like a one drop Tameo, which also seems to have potential to be pretty pushed because it's a one drop that can transform into a planeswalker. Granted, it was standard, but all the old flip walkers that were all like 3 drops and also Jace is a 2 drop all saw like an incredible amount of play just because they like generated so much cardboard for their mana cost. Anyways.
Yeah, I would expect these to be like pretty similarly powerful to a certain extent. But also like that is the kind of aggressive mana cost that maybe makes it see like legacy play, which would be really interesting. That is like the Grist one especially is a legitimately very powerful magic card. I don't remember what the Tameo does, but I do recall it being like quite strong.
It's it's a 1-drop 0/3 flyer. I don't have it right in front of me, but I know the front side is a 1-drop 0/3 flyer. It's blue. Whenever she attacks, you investigate, and then when you draw your 3rd card of the turn, you transform her. So like if you brainstorm, you can transform her. I remember like the not being super impressed. Oh, here we go. Flying 0/3 attacks, investigate. When you draw your 3rd card in a turn, transformer. 2 loyalty. So she comes in real low. +2 until your next turn. Whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, it gets -1/-0 until end of turn. So like, you know, kind of protects herself a little bit with the +2. -3, so she cannot use that immediately. So you have to plus her, and then she has to survive a turn for you to be able to take no damage, or pretty much. Return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. If it's a green card, add a mana of any color. Kind of sick.
It's exactly. Very aggressive when you're thinking like If you're thinking of like a Delver sort of mana curve of like turn one Tamio, turn two Brainstorm with maybe Lightning Bolt and Daze backup to then flip your Tamio pluser, be able to stop an opposing Orcish Bowmaster maybe, or like Lightning Bolt an opposing Delver or something like that. Mm-hmm. Being able to buy back your cards with her minus ability, I think, is quite strong. Minus mm-hmm. three is a lot, so I think that probably minus something that stands in its way ultimately. But definitely, like, in a format where Brainstorm is legal, very low investment for getting a thing that can possibly, like, gain you four life on turn mm-hmm. three.
Mm-hmm. And then she does also have a minus seven if you ever get there. It's very much a win more. Ultimate classic planeswalker, draw cards equal to half the number of cards in your library. Rounded up, you get an emblem if you have no maximum hand size. That's a real classic Tamio ultimate right there.
But again, if you can flip this thing on turn two, like that's not, I don't know, like in the right situations, it might not be that difficult to plus it up that many times. It's got a plus two.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. They also, I didn't realize they did a row. Okay, we don't have to go through all of these.
Oh, no, we probably shouldn't. That's how this is going to take a goddamn hour.
I know. Rao Monsoon Mage, notably, is a another Goblin Electromancer.
Oh, that's cool. I don't know if I saw that one.
2-drop, 1-3. So really, he's a red Brawl, actually.
That's cool.
You cast an instant or sorcery spell during your turn, you flip a coin. If you lose the flip, he deals a damage to you. If you win the flip, you get to transform him. Oh, wow. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways. So Modern Horizons 3, even after I've looked at a lot of the leaks, but for whatever reason the debut stream always gets me more hyped up about a set. It's nice to see the cards as real cards. We got some really strong cards confirmed to be real, notably.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that you like don't quite know if any of these leaks are like legitimate when you yep. see them. It is nice to have the collective unveiling of the streams.
Yep, definitely agree. There's six is a card now. That's just neat. That's a fun reference. That was also leaked, but nice to see it for real. You know, there's the Markov, there's just like a lot of cool designs in this set. And for us CDH heads, any CDH heads out there, Flare of Duplication was unfortunately confirmed to be real for all the Rograk haters out there. You are even more in the pit. Because now you can sacrifice Rograk to Deflecting Swat. So, seems pretty good to me.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Flare Duplication, best one of that for the CEDH scene. Outside of the CEDH scene, I thought like in Modern and stuff, Flare of Denial was going to be bad. But I don't, or like in a lot of formats, I was like, Flare of Denial seems like fine, but sacrificing a non-token blue creature seems like a pretty high cost. However, it was brought to my attention by the Jerry T Show with Dave Shields. Do you know what two creatures that are blue are, Dan?
Off the top of my head? Yeah, like Mahamoodi Djinn and Air Elemental.
Unfortunately, no. The ones of concern are called Narc Amoeba and Prized Amalgam.
Those are really good ones.
Those are non-token blue creatures.
I'm going to be playing against this f***ing vintage now, too. Oh, no. I already hate playing against Bizarre decks so much. Bizarre decks don't need that. Can they ban that for Bizarre decks, please? Mike Rosewater, if you're listening.
It's just like Dredge is kind of always like right on the edge of like coming back in Modern. So I think we might see a little Dredge resurgence maybe in Modern off of that. However, I do not claim to be a Modern specialist or anything like that. All right, we're keeping this show moving. Like you said, Dan, Modern Horizons 3 looks great. I'm sure we'll talk about it more in the future because the cards are cool.
Be funny if we didn't.
We like it. That's true. You know where we would be talking about it, Dan? Do you know?
Product Watch.
So true. It's time for the Product Watch. It's time for the Product Watch. And by it's time for the Product Watch, what can I say? We are still in May. The blessed month of the year with no product release that we're aware of. We don't really have anything to talk about. The Product Watch is once again empty. Anything from you, Dan? Any products?
The new Elden Ring trailer just came out today. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, I don't like that game.
Awesome. Yes. Ending.
Dan, I must admit, I was going to rant here again about like the secret lair distribution, but we've talked about that on almost every episode of the show. So I'm not going to.
I think people know how we feel about it.
Yep, exactly. So we're going to scoot right past the product watch, and we're actually going to transition into something a little bit different here at the Co-host Notebook. And welcome back to the Co-host Notebook, the part of the show where the co-hosts talk about whatever they want to, as long as it's not about Magic the Gathering. This is a new rule I just made up. Dan, what do you have written down in your co-host notebook today, this fine Monday?
Much like the release schedule of Magic the Gathering, I have not had a whole lot going on. I've just been doing a lot of the same old. It's been really nice weather in Philly. There's a motorcycle driving by right now. I'm trying to enjoy the Philadelphia weather as much as I can before it gets like ungodly hot in like the July-ish area. It is just incredibly hard to be outside. So, yeah, been spending a lot of time in the woods, practicing some mindfulness, and it's been really nice. Been trying to unplug a little bit, sort of getting my toes back into the streaming world with a semi-regular schedule over there again. But yeah, been doing a good job of changing my schedule around enough to have enough free time that I can enjoy the things I want to enjoy, including hiking and drumming, and haven't been doing a whole lot else. I got the original remastered trilogy of Spyro. Did you ever play those games?
I did. I was actually talking about the remasters with a pal the other day. I forgot that that was like, you can like get it on Switch, you can get it on Steam, it's on PlayStation.
I got it on Steam for like $13. I was blown away. I played those games when I was young enough that I don't remember anything about them.
Yeah.
And playing them again, I was like blown away by like just how beautiful everything looked. The remaster is really nice. Well worth $13.
I was talking to a friend about it the other day because slowly I'm realizing that like 3D platformers are probably one of my favorite genres of games. But yet I have not expanded that far into the greater canon. I just play them very occasionally and I'm always like, wow, that game was incredible, even if it's like a middling 3D platformer. So I need to dip deeper into the canon. I need to replay all the Spyro games. I played them all when I was, again, a kid. So like, yeah, I remember nothing about them except that you hop around and are a little dragon.
That is exactly my memory of it.
There's a tough like skateboarding game. At least it was tough when I was six. So well, if that's all you got in your co-host notebook, Dan, I suppose we have to bring this episode to a close. Do you have anything else that you would like to tell our listeners? Like, go play the drums.
Yeah, usual plugs. Follow me on the platforms, Moderately Anonymous MTG everywhere. My new semi-regular streaming schedule is Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, and every other Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Follow me on Twitch, follow me on Twitter, follow me on YouTube. I am getting more into MTGO content, so check that out. Be cool to your neighbors, invest in your local library. Have fun, be yourself. Fight Club rules.
They're rebuilding my local library right now. I'm pretty excited about that.
You should go and smash it with a hammer. I'm just kidding.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have a great interview coming up. Thanks for listening. Hey, it's me again, Cal. I hope you're really enjoying this episode. If you are really enjoying it, consider joining the Brass Section and supporting us on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can help me pay my bills and also the bills of the co-hosts. You'll gain access to our supporter-exclusive show, Heraldic Banter, and you'll also get unceremoniously tossed into our Discord. Check out the link now in the podcast notes to toss us a few bucks. We really appreciate it. Hello, and welcome back. Today, I am joined by not one guest, but two. I am joined by Hobbs and Ryan, better known as Tron is Bad. Maybe not even better known as Tron is Bad anymore. What's up, fellas? Thanks for joining me.
Hello.
I think the hard part is that Ryan loses some of that allure now that Tron is not bad.
How's Tron these days?
It's been eating well.
First question of the day. How do we feel about Tron in the meta at this point?
Well, with Modern Horizons 3 coming out, it is seeming like Tron is getting a wild amount of love. And Kes actually tweeted at me saying that now I'm legally contracted to change my name to Tron is Good.
Like, Tron is Good.
Well, like, freaking colorless elemental blast.
If you weren't going to change your name to like Tron is Good after it was in the finals of a pro tour within the last two years, then I don't think there's a good time to change it.
Well, the reason, I mean, I didn't change it because it didn't win, you know what I mean?
if it had won the Modern Pro Tour, it would have been good, but since it lost in the finals, bad.
Listen, second place is the first loser. Come on.
That's true.
You know, that's like the t-shirts I used to wear when I was in high school when I ran.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was that kid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, you two know, but my listeners perhaps do not. I am having the two of you on today to talk about yourselves, but also you two are the progenitors, main drivers, whatever kind of language you would like to use behind something called Better Days MTG. Oh, we got some stickers. I didn't know you had stickers. That's a cute logo.
We will send you some. Shout out Inkling. Yeah. Shout out Inkling Customs.
Classic.
Yeah.
Sweet. Something called Better Days MTG. I know what Better Days MTG is. You two know what Better Days MTG is. Would one of you like to give listeners a pitch as to what Better Days MTG is? What's the point? What's it about? Sure. You may now compete to see who goes first.
Do you want to, or do you want me to say, well, like, where it came from?
It comes from Ryan, so I would like Ryan to start it off. I really would.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, let's start this with Better Days Wouldn't Be Better Days Without the Both of Us.
Yes.
So, I started it, sure, but it's not anything without Hobbs and I. So this goes back to MagicCon Minneapolis. I was having dinner with Alan, Mental Misplays, and he had asked me, he goes, hey, would you be perceptive to any kind of like constructive criticism over like some of the things that you post? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. He said, have you ever thought about doing your coffee posts in short form video content? And I said, no, I didn't think to do that at all. Like I was previously just posting a picture of my daily coffee with just like a mental focus of like what I wanted to do. And I was doing this pre Magic the Gathering. I've been doing this for a while, just like on my personal accounts. So I started doing the short form content and it was catching and people were receptive to it and it had really good feedback. And then Hobbs reached out to me after Hobbs and I had met. I want to say, what, maybe like 3-4 months after that, yep, give or take.
Yeah.
And Hobbs reached out to me and said, hey, same kind of conversation. He goes, would you take, like, do you want to hear this idea? And I said, yeah, sure. And Hobbs said, did you ever think about doing what you do and kind of making an umbrella of a hashtag just so like it can be easily found and so people can search for it, people can use a hashtag? And again, clueless me, because you know I can count to 7, says no, I never thought of that. And Hobbs was just like, okay, so why don't we like think of, let's bounce around some names. And I think Hobbs threw out a couple of names, like it was just too similar to like some things that have happened in the past of like mental magic or whatever. And I was just like, I just kind of want people to have like better days when they're thinking about stuff throughout the course of their gameplay or like stuff revolving around the community or just like how they're facing their day-to-day life. I want everybody to have like a better day. And then we were just like, I was like, wait, what about Better Days MTG? And Hobbs was like, I like that. So, and lo and behold, that is how Better Days MTG came to be. And it's crazy. You click on that hashtag right now and it just goes.
Yeah.
And it's sick. That's where it came from, though.
Yeah. So, and it's like from my end of things. So I've been doing mental health and Magic the Gathering kind of work for like the Goblin Lore podcast is the podcast that I co-host. Our 6th anniversary is coming up in less than a month.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. It's like, it's really funny because I I have to accept the fact that that's a pretty long tenured podcast for Magic. I mean, it puts us up there with a lot of shows that I admire. And so it's wild that I have to think about we're, you know, 225 episodes in. We're, you know, we've been doing this and we've always had this focus on mental health. And one of the things that I had used was previously used like mental health MTG. It's just like a generic hashtag. And I would just post things with that. I would post conversations. Cause to me, I think the reason I was drawn to some of the stuff that Ryan was doing and wanted to kind of talk about doing this was I am a big believer in cutting down stigma. Stigma is like the number one thing. Stigma is one of the biggest predictors of poor outcomes with mental health, especially with people with like schizophrenia and some of the more like bipolar disorder. It's internalized stigma where people actually believe these thoughts or believe these stigmatized viewpoints are associated with higher rates of suicide and everything else. So fighting stigma since I've been in my 20s and I am in my mid 40s has been an important kind of thing for me. And being able to marry that with magic was huge. And I wanted to find a way to move beyond the podcast of being 50 minutes long to something that was more easily digestible and small. And I am not a video content person. I kept having people like Cass tell me, like, you need to just do it. Like, it sucks, but just do it because like it's a different audience. It's more going to be, you know, they'll do fine with a couple minutes. You can just do that and move on. And I saw Ryan's videos and, you know, I'd met Ryan and then I started seeing his videos and, Ryan has a style of very much just kind of talking to somebody, which is what I think I do too.
Just sharing a cup of coffee. Yeah. That's basically what it
the
is.
The idea.
Like a lot of mine are about like, I'm out on a walk. I when I share my videos and stuff, it's me out on a walk because that's what I'm doing. And that's my way of kind of connecting with people. And so I actually reached out initially to Ryan because I wanted to, you know, we know how the community can be in terms of things like branding or there's always concerns, you know, you don't want to just like come in and start railroading. And so I mainly reached out initially to be like, hey, I love this. I don't watch video content. You have gotten me to watch video content. And I've been thinking of doing something similar. Like, do you have a problem if I'm doing something similar? Right. I was like, what the hell, man? Like, no, why would I?
No,
like,
this is my territory.
I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm an awkward man. And I also am somebody that just believes in directly like stating things and asking. That's a big thing for me is to just, you know, even if I think the person's going to be fine with it and I know them, I'm still going to just say, hey, is there any reason, something that I'm missing? I want to make sure I'm never missing something.
Yeah. And I had appreciated that a lot because especially within the community and within content creation period, exactly what Hobbs was saying, there's a lot of railroading that happens and there's a lot of just like people feeling like their toes are being stepped on because they think that they're doing this thing and then they see somebody else doing that similar thing. And let's just be totally transparent with each other. No one in this community is original. No one in any community is original. Like we're all doing the same thing, but in different fonts. And that's okay. That's totally fine. It's just us putting our own spin on things. And something as sensitive and not as talked about as like mental health, that's really important because it's like, not only do we want people to see what we're doing, but we want people to interact with what we are doing in their own way and tell their own stories. And my entire spin on it in the beginning, like I said, it's just sharing a cup of coffee because 9 times out of 10 of the conversations that I've had with other people that are important in my life, I'd be like, hey, are you doing anything on this day? Can we like go grab a cup of coffee or something?
Yeah, let's go chat.
Yeah, let's just go chat. And it's a comfortable place and it feels like a safe place. And it feels like somewhere that you can be yourself or share your vulnerability or share what's going on in your life. Catch up with that person that you haven't seen in 10 years for them to tell you 3 heartbreaking things that have happened to them over the past 10 years and 2 incredible moments that you wish that you could have shared with them. So that's kind of like just where it came from for me. And to know that Hobbs was now doing something, going on a walk with somebody, one, that's health right there. And integrating mental health with regular health is awesome. So it's just like it's something that you can do to connect with other people.
Yep, that certainly makes sense. I think that the railroading thing, it's like fascinating. It's just like it is inevitable in the Magic the Gathering space because, you know, Magic the Gathering content creation is like 4 niches down. Mm-hmm. And so there's only so much space there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's great to hear how that all started and also kind of what it is about. I did want to ask both of you individually. I guess we can start with Hobbs because Ryan was talking last.
I appreciate the equity.
Andrew, we're taking, you know, we're just taking turns. We're taking turns.
This is
turns
good
here.
Modeling.
That is turn agency right there.
If there are any parents out there listening, this is good. This is good to foster.
We take turns when we speak.
Yeah. Yeah,
we take turns on this podcast. I'm giving Hobbs the talking stick. This may sound like a weird question to ask, but I'm gonna try to word it in a way that isn't weird. I'm gonna say it the weird way first, and then I'm gonna clarify myself a little bit. Hobbs, what is it about mental health for you? Because, and then let me clarify that question a little bit. Obviously, like, everyone cares about mental health, right? Like you were saying, it's a big, well, people should care about mental health. I see your trepidation with me saying everyone cares about mental health. Everyone should care about mental health.
It would be nice if people cared about mental health. Yes. Yeah.
However, not everyone cares about it enough to say, oh, I'm going to go and do this thing. Why is it so meaningful to you? And I mainly ask this question because I think the two of you are kind of coming at it from maybe a little bit of different angles. So I want to pick your brain about that.
I think what you managed to get to with getting Ryan and I on are two people that I also think of being, the reason I think that this stood out to both of us is we're both people that are really vulnerable or willing to be vulnerable. And because we both have learned, and I think probably, like you said, maybe through different routes or through different experiences. And we both have learned the importance of vulnerability and the fact that not talking about it is not helping anyone. And if you look through the thread, what you'll oftentimes find is the people who feel that like something was said by somebody that they connected with that they weren't comfortable talking about. Right. And I think that for me, that probably is a big part of it. So I come from it in an interesting dual role. I come from it as somebody who is a mental health practitioner. So if people don't know, and I don't ever assume that you do, I am a clinical psychologist. That's my day job. I work at a VA hospital and I work predominantly with people with schizophrenia and with psychosis, because that is an area of healthcare that is much needed. And the VA is the closest we get to socialized medicine, which is awesome because that's the care, that the type of wraparound care that I think is really important. And within that field, there's the concept of mental health recovery. And mental health recovery is really this move beyond just symptoms. It's really this idea that people can live meaningful lives with purpose. So to me, it's like, duh. Like as a practitioner, right? Like it's like for years, it's always been, I want to be less sad. Well, okay, great. If you were less sad, what were you doing? Because I want to care what you're doing. So from that perspective, I think it's knowing that I've seen the impact of stigma and people not ever having learned the skills that were needed to talk about emotions. They don't have the language. You know, it's funny. We're talking about the talking stick and we're talking about this like that. I mean, people don't have that language, that emotional intelligence. They don't have that insight into their own backgrounds or what led them to where they are. And then on a second part of this is I was diagnosed with depression at 18 in high school. I have basically struggled with depression and anxiety to varying degrees since I was 18 years of age. And that's why I always think about it as it gives me a lived experience. And I don't get to talk about that in my job because obviously you don't want to come to your professional to tell them this thing. I don't need to. And I do have that lived experience. I do have depression that has been a main part of my just identity and who I am. I joked about the shirt saying second place is the first loser. I mainly got checked out because I was running inconsistently and I didn't like that as a competitive runner. And I assumed it must be because I had like low iron or something. And I got into the doctor's office and they handed me some questionnaires to fill out. And I'm reading through these questionnaires. I'm like, dang, I don't know what these are, but these, I'm crushing this.
I really relate to all of these questions.
Yeah, they're going to be so proud when they get this back and they see, you know, like, do I lose interest in things? Heck yeah, I do. Do I have trouble sleeping? Who doesn't?
Yeah.
And then like I come, you know, it's like I fill this out, turn it in, and the person comes back and is like, well, blood work's fine. Like, we need to talk about this piece of paper. Like, what do you mean? Come on.
Sir, you have clinical depression. Yeah, like,
we want to actually consider a medication. And I'm like, you know, the perception of me was this outgoing, happy, laughing person because I was a child of the 90s with the self-deprecation that taught me that was how I responded.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah.
So
whole lot of Rocco's Modern Life.
Yeah.
Yep. Whole lot of it. I get you.
So that's why, to me, the conversation coming to Magic is just like you said, we're a niche within a niche within a niche, but we're a microcosm of society at large. And I easily saw that those discussions weren't happening.
And you wanted to make it happen.
I did.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I guess that leaves for me and where
I hereby pass the talking stick.
I would like to pass the talking stick if that's possible, because I am so trying true. To learn this.
I snatched it away from you. My bad.
I'll just reach into.
Yeah. Reach on over and grab it.
Okay. Exactly. Well, for me, it's like Hobbs and my relationship, it's kind of like a visual experience of Hobbs is someone who now does this professionally, and I am the one who is on the other side, kind of just as like the patient, you know what I mean? And I have these lived in experiences as well, and where I come from with them specifically is I was a kid who did not know how to deal with these emotions. I did not know the right way of handling my emotions. I was very angry. I got into a lot of trouble. I went down a very, very dark drug and alcohol related path. And that's kind of like where I come from with these things, especially when it comes to magic and integrating it within magic and how I go about my day-to-day life, is that my escape back around the time that I was really just like grinding tournament to tournament to tournament, my escape became one of my, not really downfalls, I'd say, but put me into dark places. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why is this going on? Like, why am I so hellbent on doing well in magic that now magic is becoming something that is so negative for me? So seeing that it became negative made me feel like I need to kind of just look at everything a little bit differently, and I need to handle myself in a different way, because where I come from my places of depression and things that have gone on between like my parents growing up and like me feeling like I had to step in as kind of just like a parent role for my brother. And now years later in this current day and age, me and my brother have great relationships with our family, which is awesome. And what I could hope for everyone else that has ever like dealt with stuff like that is that I wanted so bad for magic to be positive for me. And I kind of just like didn't make it happen on my own, but I made it happen in a way that I was able to lean on other people within the community and through travels. So I guess not as and obviously this is not a competition in any kind of way, no pun intended, but not as like decorated as Hobbs is when it comes to mental health, because I'm a mental health advocate. I am not educationally. I do not have any ties to mental health. I'm not a professional by any means. I am just someone who has been through the ringer, and I decided that it's time to just speak up about things and let other people know that it's okay to speak up about your things too, especially when it comes to this being our escape. This is something that we do every day. Magic is literally my life. Like, if I don't feel comfortable enough to talk about my life, then what am I doing and how is it positively benefiting me? So coming into magic and being in magic for as long as I have, I've noticed trends with other people of having similar vices as me and having similar thought patterns and kind of like shutting off when it comes down to the nitty gritty of talking about their emotions and being like, okay, well actually let's just talk about the next round. Like let's just ignore everything else. Cause that's not,
we're on to round eight.
Yeah. I don't care that I am sleep deprived. I don't care that I have stuff dealing with outside of the magic world. I'll deal with it when I can. Cause it's not okay. Like it feels okay in the moment, but you're going to have to deal with it sooner or later. And that's just kind of like what I've not kind of implemented my way of thinking to make people talk. It's to make people feel comfortable enough to talk. And that's kind of where I came from for me, is that I've just dealt with this my entire life. Same thing. Depression hit me at a very young age. And now at 32 years of age, I'm just really realizing that it's okay to talk about everything. So that's just kind of what I'm trying to convey.
Excellent. Ryan?
Yes.
Would you say that you have a healthier relationship with Magic the Gathering now than you did in the past?
I think right now, my relationship with Magic is the healthiest relationship that I've ever had with it, period. Because I am still grinding as hard as I can. Well, not actually as hard as I can. I could absolutely grind harder with Magic.
You have healthier boundaries when it comes to the grinding of Magic.
Correct. Yeah. I now have healthier...
Introducing the correct way to talk about this
situation. I now have healthier boundaries with myself and Magic the Gathering. I want to play all of the time. Absolutely. But I have fastly realized... my emotional response to how I am doing within the game is not what it used to be. And that makes me very, very happy.
I think that I appreciate that you like brought that up specifically, because I think that's something in Magic the Gathering spaces in our niche of a niche of a niche. but I'm sure that's also very common in a lot of other like heavy hobbyist slash competitive spaces. Something that's not talked about enough is that like, actually, a lot of people, when they're on their 15th game of ranked League of Legends, or they're on their third, you know, their third, you know, grinding a weekend of grinding.
Let's just don't read the chat.
their third big competitive event in a row that they're just absolutely miserable at, and they're doing it because they feel obligated to, or they're literally addicted to the game, and all of that. That's a very interesting space to talk about, where it's just like, actually, it's okay. it's okay to step back from Magic the Gathering sometimes if it's affecting your mental health. I like somebody said that to me once when I was like 19 or like 18, and
so like definitely a year, desperately, year or so ago, right?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Baby,
I was like 18, about to go off to college. I was like definitely.
Just bought your first GameCube.
Yeah, exactly. For like all intents and purposes, like maybe not technically addicted to Magic the Gathering by whatever formal definition that may have or whatever, but it just like simply defined my entire life, and it was all I thought about, and it controlled my moods at all times depending on how I did at the latest PPTQ I had gone to or whatever. And somebody was like, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. And that just like somebody finally said that to me, and it like unlocked something in my brain that my hobbies didn't have to be miserable.
So interesting. It's taken me a lot of years to get back into running. So because of exactly what we're talking about, it's really funny. This is one thing that I've talked to like Mike Linneman about. He was like a D1 collegiate sprinter. Like Mike was D1. Like I was D3. And at the same, even at that level, at low level competitive collegiate running, It was literally my day. Outside of being in class, I was with the same 10 to 15 people every single day and every weekend. I ate meals with everybody on the team. I went for runs with everybody on the team. I went to meets on the weekends with everybody on the team. And that was my life. And when I got hurt, I didn't have anything else. And I saw this with a bunch of athletes around me. And Mike and I have talked about the fact that so much of this is a good analog for Magic. And you will find, I think, former athletes and former collegiate athletes that play Magic, and people don't really take the crossovers that there is. Because what you guys are describing was the same thing for me. I watched teammates get hurt and be out for a season, and substance use started up very heavily. I know for myself, I had like less of a sense of identity when I was hurt. And I'd still be going down to the gym to like sit around, right? You know,
just like hang out.
Like, maybe I could do some physical therapy. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm already done, but I'll just stay until it's dinner time with you all. I mean, but it became that. And so it's interesting to me that then when I came over to Magic and started playing Magic, because I didn't start till I was really old. I didn't start playing Magic.
Like, oh, so 22? Yeah. Is that what's old? I don't know.
No, that is. That's why I'm laughing, is because it's always that. Hobbs, how long have you been playing Magic? Well, I didn't learn.
Do you know a game called Chandelier? Yeah,
I didn't start actually playing until after undergrad in 2002. I was buying packs of Onslaught off the shelf. So I was really a latecomer to Magic. But I mean, like, when I started playing Magic, it had some of that elements. And then the times when I used to really draft a ton on MTGO, it was horrible. Like tilt has always been something that I've struggled with in Magic and in poker. And playing Storm helped cure me of that, I will say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I could goldfish games.
I love
and
that.
Then like I could also just realize that I could do everything in my power and just lose. And like
I swear I will get you back into Legacy. I will.
I have been looking at deck rental services on MTGO.
They're not that expensive.
They are. I've been looking at it because I can once again play a league while my kids are asleep versus go to a store.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legacy is the only day two I've ever GP'd. I mean, the only GP I've ever dated too was Legacy.
Legacy's so good. But, I love Legacy so much. we won't turn this into a Tron Talks about Legacy.
Well, no, that's fine.
I promise.
Kyle's like, Jesus Christ, what did I get myself?
Hey, now you can talk about Legacy as much as you want on this podcast.
Good.
But yeah, I mean, it's like that sports world type like crossover. It was. One of the coolest things I've gotten to do because of Magic was I got to interview Hunter Pence for the Goblin Lore podcast, and getting to talk to like that elite of an athlete and then talk about that relationship with Magic is just seeing that psychology is something that is fascinating to me.
That's, you know, a lot of times I think of that, right? Like, I think that's so cool that you were able to talk to Hunter Pence and you were able to talk to him about Magic and obviously baseball too, right? But then you also think that there are other people within this community too, like Cassius Marsh.
Yeah.
Cassius Marsh literally came from football, came from the Steelers and into now owning one of the biggest card stores in the country, which is very, very cool. And I would love to talk to him one day about like his mental integration in between like football and Magic as well. But back to kind of like tilting off within game or letting that affect your mood. I do want to give a shout out real quick. I want to shout out, Mapson and Expedition Map, the Dark Depths podcast, because anytime that I see him at any kind of event, he will never answer the question, how are you doing within the event, ever. It's just who he is. He doesn't talk about his record. He requests to like talk about something else. Like, and I think that's awesome because sure, some people can find that in like a standoffish way, but like that's how he navigates the day. That's how he doesn't let his record affect how he was doing. So I've grown accustomed to any time that I see him, I say, hey, how are you feeling? Instead of like, how are you doing? Because how are you doing connotates while you're within a competition. How are you doing in the competition? So it becomes a learning and now shout out to my partner because she teaches me a lot about proper communication and the way that I say things, right? To changing your vernacular of from how are you doing, which is directly connotated to what is your record? Like, it's result oriented, but how are you feeling is something like, hey, like you want to talk about like how I'm doing in the day, like what's new with you? Like, and that's the kind of thing that I've kind of grown over the past year of like, or since I've actually met Mapson and kind of like integrated into my tournament play now too. So like whenever somebody asks me like, oh, how are you doing the event? I go, I'm doing fine. But like, so I had like lunch earlier and then I'll just like start talking about something else or like
ask them like, day,
how you been? Or like, what have you been up to? Like, talk to you about your day. Say hello. Like, we're here. We're also at these events. We're also at these tournaments. We're also at these conventions because it's fun to see the people that you don't get to see often.
And we're like, here as people, not just as here is pieces people, not in, just on the spreadsheet of the competition or whatever.
Listen, if you act like that, you'll always be Nine Thumb Breakers. It is what it is.
Secret to getting the squeaking in to top eight on Breakers is asking people how they're doing unrelated to the event.
Completely related because it'll affect your mood.
So true.
Yeah, literally. So that's just kind of how I feel about it these days.
This is where the concept of something like mindfulness comes in, which is what's important to me. It's observing how things are instead of how I want them to be. And that was mindfulness-based practices is what helped me with Tilt in general, with games and not just Magic. Like I'm a competitive person. It's a huge joke amongst like my wife's family when we first started dating. I mean, we'd be like family game night and I would be like, we play this game called,
I have got to win Monopoly.
It's like called like Organ Attack, and I'm trying to introduce the stack to these people. I'm like, whoa, so you're allowed funny. To play a response, but we need to look at turn order.
That's
like,
so right,
like,
funny.
Like my brain at first was like, what do you mean? Well, okay, or I'm just going to sit here. You guys don't understand. I'm going to destroy you. You don't play in turn order. Fine. You use your response. I'll save mine for when it, I mean, it's just like, but my brain 100% would do that. And like, I had to so much work about just enjoying playing games with my wife and her family, playing Mario Kart with my wife and me and her being like, yeah, I'm never going to beat you. And I'm like, yeah, but you still want to play, right? Like, I had to be like, I'm like trying to like, okay, I'm not going to get, I like, okay, I can.
Here. So to kind of just like tack onto that, this is actually something very big for me that I've learned. And recently it's changing how I'm playing to make other people feel comfortable. Big thing happened, when Lorcana first came out. Right. And I wanted to get into Lorcana. I thought it was like really, really cool. May also really, really loves like Disney and was very, very excited about the Lorcana card game coming out. And I got invited to play in the first invitational of Lorcana period out in Ohio with Apex. I think I texted you when that was going on. I was like, hey, I'm going through.
Just like, hey, you coming through? And I'm like, no. I'm real busy.
So when we were just like playing Lorcana at home, like experiencing the new decks, it became less fun for her. And I kind of was ruining the game for her at a point because of like us just playing against each other. I would like shuffle my cards. I'd like play like my mannerisms that I don't really think about like playing Magic the Gathering because I'm competitive, just constantly flicking the cards. Like it caused her to have anxiety about like playing the game with me because she felt intimidated. She felt like I'm taking this game too seriously. So one night she's just like, I don't want to play. Like I'm done. So
just wanted to throw Moana at Robin 100%. Hood. Like
100%. And like she wanted to play this game and she has fun doing it. And I wanted this to be something that like we could play together and like have fun doing it. So I'm like, great. I am now ruining this thing because I'm letting my competitive spirit, and it's not always a negative thing, right? Having a competitive spirit can be a positive thing, but I am letting it affect now more than just me in a negative way. And it's causing somebody to not want to play this game with me. So I was like, you know what? Nope. We're gonna make sure that she likes to play this game together. And I did. And still to this day, like playing whatever it is that we're playing, we could be playing Lorcana. We haven't played Lorcana in a while. She's just been playing mostly on Pixelborn because she's a sweaty grinder.
Sweaty grinder mode?
But or like Fortnite or anything, and just like better communication and like playing in a way that like it's fun, because these are ways that you can implement on your day to day of just like, sure, playing in a commander game or playing 1v1 legacy, playing proxy legacy, just playing over a spell table or a tabletop, etc. Making sure that you are playing in a way. What's that saying that we love to hear? Play like you want to be invited back. And that I've taken so critically and so personally, because like I don't want to play with somebody and they just like, I hate playing against this guy, and especially not against my partner. Like I want my partner to have fun. So that happened, and that changed. I don't want to say that changed everything for me, but that changed almost every way that I see myself playing games from now on. Like even at an FNM, I want to have fun. Sure. Yeah. I'll take the game seriously. I'll be there to win.
You're still playing well. You're still playing like soundly.
I'm going to beat you and you're going to enjoy playing with me.
Yeah. It's not like they're just like, well, I played against a guy who was kind of rude and didn't really talk to me and just slammed all his cards down and looked impatient when I was taking 40 seconds to make a game action, 4 seconds to make a game action. Mm-hmm. And then, big difference in between that and I'm here to win the game, but we can have fun.
Absolutely. And then you realize the amount of people that just like treat it like there is nothing else that matters. And that's in my opinion, that's not how it should be. Even on such like you look at professional Magic, and I love watching professional Magic. You see the people that are playing at the Pro Tour, you see the people that are playing at Worlds, and you see that they still have that level of camaraderie and fun, and they'll have banter with it. Like it's just so easy. It's just so easy not to be nasty. Well, when playing
this makes me think of the one of my favorite memes because it's kind of it is actually kind of nerdy is the bell curve meme where you kind of show like the people the higher they're along it's like the new players and the players that are the most actual like entrenched worlds pro tour players have a lot more in common with how they approach the game and
I will say this 1,000 times over, and it's so funny because it's legitimately mirror reflective of what you're saying. The players that play the least amount and the players that play at the highest level have so much in common. It's the people that play super casually that are the most negative about it. It's like, what is going on?
And that reminds me of my days playing a couple of matches of League of Legends ranked per day.
You know? Oh, man.
I'm so glad I dodged that bullet at any point in my life.
I was a part of that, too.
Game is unfortunately, like, objectively fun, but also objectively miserable at the same time.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%.
And it's always your teammates' fault. Don't forget that.
Wow.
You're winning your lane no matter if your opponent got your tower first.
Very strong.
I won my lane. Yeah, my teammates threw. Couldn't do anything about it. Nope. You know, I drew too many lands. Couldn't do anything about it. Same as it ever was.
All chat, your ADC sucks. Like,
if I had one more turn. I understand that. You know, there's this podcast called Goblin Lore Podcast that I don't know when this is coming out, but an episode we just did was on cognitive distortions. And one of those is this concept of like an external locus of control. So, you know, if somebody else does it, it's because they're an asshole. If we do it, it's just because, I just got unlucky. What are you talking about? But I mean, yeah, I get it.
Wait a minute. What did you say? Cognitive distortion.
So there's like
cognitive distortions. The external locus of control sounds like an Eldrazi.
External locus of control.
Hey, Gavin, are you listening to this?
Hobbs leaking Modern Horizons 3 card live on air?
Gavin, please don't make...
Thanks for leaking my preview card, Hobbs.
It's okay. It's probably already been leaked. Let's be honest.
That's so sad.
Basically, the whole set is out.
Leak. I know.
Yeah, but if you're listening, you need card names. I have so many psychic...
Cognitive distortion, eternal locus of control. That's crazy.
That sounds like a Yu-Gi-Oh card. That sounds like a Yu-Gi-Oh card
that you synchro summon.
Like, Omnath external locus of control. Like, I can do this. Insane. I have it designed. That's it's wild. Halfway done. Yeah.
Listen, if Goblin Lore doesn't work out, R&D will.
I thought you were going to say if that whole psychologist gig doesn't work out.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You know, Hobbs, maybe you have a future in R&D, you know, when that psychologist thing really dries up, you know?
No.
I think, man, I've never really thought about that before, Hobbs, until you like mentioned it right now. But like one of the actual strengths of Magic the Gathering's card design is that its design as a game is that it incentivizes people's like thinking surrounding the externalized locus of control. Because like a core conceit of the game is just like actually you get to feel better about yourself because your land every time.
It's great.
Right?
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
The variance is just really good at reinforcing what is perhaps actually a negative thing.
And it's really healthy to let those thought patterns develop and then apply them to like your real world life. That's a great thing. You should really do that. Yeah. You know,
I was late to work because it was the road's fault. I
mean, if you could find ways to externalize everything,
those red lights, they really get in my way. I should do something about that. All right, we're running low on time, I would say. So I did have one more question that I wanted to ask the two of you. And this is, again, maybe a weird question to ask, but because... Well, obviously,
you don't need to keep saying that when you're the one asking these questions. Like it's inherent. Well, it's given.
I know.
It's a given.
I know. It's okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm asking the questions. Yeah, therefore, they're weird questions.
Go. You got there.
You got me there. Yeah. You got me there. We solved the puzzle. because this is by no means like a goals oriented thing. Right. But if either of you or both of you had a goal for what you wanted, Better Days MTG to accomplish, what would that look like?
Is it like, okay, so before we answer, are you asking like mental goal, superficial goal, like goal of the brand. This is an open-ended question. You know,
I think by goal, I more so meant superficial goal.
Okay. I want Hobbs and I to have an episode with the professor where we can talk in between gameplay about stuff like this, about important stuff, because I love everything that Prof does. I love that Prof talks about important things at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end of all of the Tolarian videos. And I think that me and Hobbs on there would be really cool, and that'd be a lot of fun.
So, Prof, we know you're listening. Hit us up.
I hate to tell you, I don't think he is.
So superficial goal, I would like a Better Days Tolarian video one day. That'd be really cool.
And that ties really well into what mine would be, because it would be something like that sort of a platform. It just gets more eyes on it, which I think is always the goal, because my goal always is, when I log into the Better Days MTG Twitter account, which I do not give,
which I still don't have the password for,
because I'm lazy and it uses my normal password, and that would require literal 5 minutes of changing it. So that hasn't happened.
That Tobbs doesn't have the capacity for.
But my goal would be, when I click on the hashtag, that I just see posts.
Thousands and thousands and thousands, which not going to lie, like I said in the beginning of the video, if you go to the Better Days MTG hashtag, there are a lot of them on there. And it's a lot on TikTok too, which is crazy. And
there's people that post, you know, I think of, for instance, Ben is the main person I think of, B Negatron. He also joined in, and especially he works in suicide prevention within the military, and he started posting daily videos during that last year, and he does it. And you know, I know we have some people that post just words of affirmation or daily gratitude type stuff nightly, and seeing it with the hashtag, like I said, the hashtag is just more to find it to me. Cause it's that was the problem.
It's like a superficial sense of validation, you know, in a way that it's not validation that we need or that we want within this, but it's validation knowing that other people are finally finding themselves comfortable enough to talk about the stuff that they have going on. And it's great.
That has always been my goal. When people have asked me, I've had people since this reach out and ask me, similar to kind of Ryan and I's first discussions of hey, are you guys okay if I post something? I'm like, please. That's the point.
That is 100%.
Our goal is to retweet these tweets. What I want.
Nothing ever happens on that account other than retweeting the Better Day stuff. And back to the whole goal thing, absolutely. To answer your superficial goal question, that's what I would love. Mm-hmm. But my goal always has been
practical goal.
My goal always from the beginning, and people have asked me about this, I think one of the reasons why Hobbs and I have been so slow with stickers or the thought of merch is that we've never really wanted to monetize anything like this. This is just something, this is kind of just something that we want to be such a positive thing for the community, where there's a lot of dark in the community, obviously, right? And you want to see these things flourish. And this is important. And my end goal for this always is to see just an influx of people doing this, of people, because the more that I see going on, the more that I know that this goal is being accomplished.
I mean,
and it's always just start a conversation. That's the ultimate goal.
One last thing that I'll kind of end with as we're kind of wrapping down is one thing that Ryan and I have both talked about too, is in some ways our videos are journals for ourselves that we're sharing with other people.
Oh yeah, keeps us accountable.
And so when I know that other people are listening, or I know that somebody might decide that they're going to post, it helps me, because this is something that I have been struggling with, is I am not always the best journal writer myself to write down, but I can throw a camera on for 2 minutes and then share it. And then then I feel more
I'm actually just forcing Hobbs to do content.
It is.
Well, on that note, I will take back the talking stick and
Once again, can you ask for it? This taking thing, Jesus, like, just ask. I would it's have wild. Handed it.
If you want to turn, just ask.
Hobbs, can I have
yes, you may.
Oh, see, now you're just asking yeah. because you said something.
Yeah, I know. Look, it's a work in progress over here. It's a work in progress. I will say, Hobbs and Ryan, thank you very much for coming on this episode and chatting with me about this very important topic. Hobbs, you said we were wrapping up, and that is true. And I wanted to say, Hobbs and Ryan, before we leave, Ryan first, is there anything else you would like to leave our audience with?
Two things. One, it's no matter what it is that you are dealing with, it is okay to talk about what it is that you're going through. It is okay to feel your feelings, and it's something that I am still learning. Secondly, I want to say thank you to you, Cal, for giving us this opportunity to talk about this. This is actually the first ever joint podcast that we have ever done together as Better Days MTG. So we appreciate you for having us on here.
Happy to have you.
Oh, well,
just got one more, Cal.
Sure. Right.
Okay.
But I guess,
okay. Somebody interviewing us. Yeah. That's what I mean.
I'm sensing some tension in the crew.
Listen. All right. That's fine. That's fine. All right. Goodbye. But no, thank you. Seriously.
Ryan has thrown the talking stick at Hobbs.
Oh, yeah.
It's all devolving.
Your turn now.
This is falling apart. This is just like group therapy, which is why my Fabine deck is called group therapy and not group hug. Just kind of falls apart towards the end.
That's fair. What's
Oh, no! Oh, no!
I always am very clear. I was like, people are like, wait, but now you're trying to do mean things to us. I was like, yeah, because you need to make some change. Yeah. You need to learn, right? So that's what this deck does. I gave you the resources.
That's so cynical. It's so good.
It's one of the things I'm most proud of in my Magic career.
Very nice.
It's calling that deck group therapy.
Hobbs, we now turn to you. Anything to leave the class with? Anything for the listeners?
Yeah, I think it is just that idea that keep the conversations going. So right now we're in the middle of recording. It is May. That is Mental Health Awareness Month. And, between the show and charity events every year, May is a good refocus time for me. I always find that it's a really rejuvenating time for content. And that's only because I'm intentional about my work with mental health in the month of May. I'm not saying that I'm not always. I add an extra degree to it. And I think the key there is, whereas just talking about mental health is so just part of my ingrained, I don't know, persona, my belief system at this point, intentionality is one of the main things that I just try to leave people with, is whatever you're doing, just be intentional about it. I think that things go a lot further if you take that extra time.
Ryan and Hobbs, Better Day MTG, thank you for joining me on this episode.
Thank you, Herald Cal. Time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Herald's Horn. If you liked what you heard, consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you really enjoyed listening, you can support us directly on Patreon. I'll even send you a sticker in the mail. Every little bit helps us make the best podcast we can for you. Check out the link in the podcast description. Herald's Horn is hosted, edited, and produced by me, Cal Jones. The co-hosts are Emma Partlow, Lexi, better known as Black Girl Mage, and Dan, better known as Moderately Anonymous MTG. All of our info also lives in the podcast description. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Herald's Horn and any place else you can find us too. If you want to reach out to me about the podcast, hit up editorial@heraldshorn.com. I'd love to see your email. Thanks again for listening to The Herald's Horn. We're having so much fun creating it. See you in 2 weeks.